Jeremy Spindler was selected by the Albany Symphony as one of three finalists in the Composer to Center Stage Reading Session competition. Jeremy will join the orchestra for the American Music Festival, take part in the professional development, and to have his work read by an orchestra. That will happen in 25 minutes. So we are very, very happy to have Jeremy here right before he takes the stage.
Indeed, and I'm here now.
Yes, Alan, welcome.
Thanks to somebody.
Alan Shartok is with us. We introduced you at the beginning of the broadcast.
I heard.
Okay.
And you said I'd be here momentarily.
Yes.
I was on the 787.
Yes.
And I lost the directions that Sarah gave me and ended up at the RPI field hockey house.
You know, I said, do you want to bet that Alan forgot his directions and nobody would take up that bet with
yes,
me?
Yes, they yeah, all okay, know me yeah. too well. Okay, so I'm continuing.
Yes,
the music
go.
Of Jeremy Spindler spans a broad range of mediums, including chamber orchestra, string quartet, electronic media, and numerous solo compositions.
His work contains strong elements of originality and complexity, yet constitutes an accessibility that speaks to general audiences as well as musicians, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Jeremy Spindler to the program. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. So, you know, we're catching you right before this reading session, and so do you get nervous before something like this, or?
I actually still do a little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
It gets a little bit easier every time, but I definitely do get a little bit nervous. I actually get the most nervous in situations where questions might be asked.
Like, what do you mean by this? What do you want here?
Exactly, yeah. The performances I'm usually fine with because at that point it's totally out of my hands and they're going to do what they're going to do. But yeah, there are definitely some nerves still involved.
So what is a reading session?
A reading session is in between a rehearsal and a performance. So the game plan for today, they're going to basically do a rehearsal. We get about 40 minutes each there for each of the three composers. They'll rehearse it like you would a normal rehearsal, stopping occasionally to fix some problems, make a few comments, that sort of thing. And then near the end, they'll try and do a run through. It's not a performance exactly, you know, there are no tickets charged for this, and it's not a formal performance per se, but it is open to the public. You know, anybody can come, that sort of thing. So it's really an opportunity for us to hear our music played by an actual professional orchestra, which for most of us is new at this point.
Yeah. Now, this is one of you're one of three
yes.
who have been selected. So when you put your name into the running, what do you want to get out of that experience?
Famous.
Famous, right. It's a great opportunity to meet people, to meet others in your field who are doing this. It's great to be able to actually hear your piece. A lot of times when you're putting things on paper, you're pretty sure what it's going to sound like. You generally know what you're doing, but there are always things that come up when you actually hear it where, you know, you realize, ooh, that didn't quite sound like I thought it would, or, you know, that part is a little too difficult. I should revise that a little bit. So working with actual musicians and getting feedback from them on how things work inside mm-hmm. the orchestra is an invaluable experience that's really hard to come by in this day and age.
So how do you learn to do this stuff?
A lot of time, a lot of practice. And I don't know, you just kind of do.
You know, I love Joe's question and your answer about how they ask questions like, what do you mean by this? Now, I think a lot of artists, visual artists and musicians and people like that, just do it. And they don't mean anything by it. Am I right about that?
With some people, I think that's definitely true. Some composers, they know exactly what they want, and they're very, very precise, and they're very detailed, and they can tell you, you know, everything that they want in a piece. I'm a little bit more on the other extreme. I write stuff. I try to put all the directions in there that I need. And I hope to just kind of let it go from there.
So would you nod your head to them and say, well, actually, those measures were dedicated to Dostoevsky?
I would probably not do that.
good. That's why we like you. You know, on your website, it says Jeremy Spindler, composer, theorist. What's the theorist
yep.
part?
So the composer is obviously the writing
right.
original music.
Yeah.
There's also a whole other world that exists largely in academia of music theory.
Okay.
And this is sort of the the research side, the academic side of music. So a theorist will take a piece of music and, you know, they'll analyze it, they'll go through it, and they'll look for formal structures, how, you know, the harmonies are built. They'll look at stylistic things. And it's kind of deconstructing a piece to see how it works. And by doing that, you can learn a lot about the composer who wrote it, and you can also pick up a lot of tricks that you can do in your own music. Oh,
well, that's what I was going to ask. Yeah. So what impact does that have on you as a composer? I mean, can you look at it? Is it possible to kind of be, you know, out of your head for a moment and look down and say, okay, this is what is happening here when you're composing?
Yeah, and that's something for me that tends to come a little bit later in the process. It's really good to do, actually, to take a step back and let it sit for a bit and, you know, kind of go back and see what's happening and make sure it's what you want. But for an example, like... George Ligeti is one of my like all-time favorite composers, and I did a lot of theory and analysis of his works. So, you know, when you hear a piece, you know what you like and what you don't like, and if you really want to figure out what that composer is doing, you go to their score and you kind of dissect it. And I learned a lot about how he created a lot of his textures and various sounds from doing the theory and the analysis. Then I was able to incorporate that into my own work.
Now, are you an academic?
That's a good question, actually. I'm actually not too sure. I recently graduated with a PhD.
Yeah, from Brandeis.
Yeah, and I'm kind of doing a little bit of reevaluation. I'm trying to figure out if I still, you know, if I want to teach, and even if I do want to teach, are the opportunities still out there? Because things have changed a lot over the last few years. I think I'm definitely more of a composer than a theorist. So I don't know actually.
You can teach composition.
Yeah,
and as one's mother might say, it'll always give you something to fall back on.
So exactly. I have. So what is actually going to be performed at the reading? What is the piece that they're working on today?
The piece is called Animated Watercolor. It's a piece originally for chamber orchestra, but they're actually going to play it with a full complement of strings, which is fantastic. It's about 8 minutes long. It was written in 2009. The title actually comes from a painting by Kandinsky. I just totally stole the title. The German title is Busling Aquarelle, which translates to animated watercolor.
Sure, sure.
He's one of my favorite artists, and anytime I'm kind of stuck for ideas, I look at some of his paintings, I flip through the books, and for some reason, the various shapes and colors just kind of generate a lot of musical ideas.
Well, it will be multimedia. Will you put the Kandinsky up over the orchestra?
No. No, I actually tend not to do that, partly because of copyright issues. Like in the program notes, I, you know, talk about the painting. So if, you know, people would want to, you know, they could, you know, just do a Google search and find it fairly easily.
That's what I'm doing right now, actually. Isn't that funny?
They all steal now. Everybody steals, you know, and they put it up at the MoMA and everything else. So.
That's it.
Now, these guys, just for you, if you're at home, are looking at a screen together, although this is radio.
Well, we were going to explain it.
Oh, well, please.
But that time's now been taken off. That's okay. At what point do you – I find this interesting because they always refer to you as you know, the people that are doing this as young composers. At what point are you no longer a young composer? Do you know when that statute of limitations is up?
40.
No, I don't know. It's all relative.
Yeah, because I notice in some places it's young composers, and then they say up and coming. That's different.
Yeah, it's I tend to think of young composers as people who are still studying, or maybe they just recently graduated.
Yeah.
I think.
But you've been doing this a long time.
I started in high school, so about 15 years, I guess, something like that, which is relatively young. I mean, if you look at a lot of the most, you know, prominent composers, they're usually in, you know, their 40s, 50s, and 60s, and it's something, you know, the older you get, the better you get, the more prominent you become. I think it's all relative. There's some composers being performed on the actual concerts that are actually younger than I am. Mm. It's all relative.
Maybe it has something to do with hairline.
There you go.
Yeah, that's it. that's in the book. When you look at beyond this, so you take the piece, it's gone through the orchestra, you've had this reading session, you'll get a recording of it, and then how long before you'll listen to that again?
I'll probably listen to it pretty soon, actually.
On the car ride back or what? Well, you're in Massachusetts, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so I'm not too far away.
All right. But so you want immediate, and then you'll take something immediately from that.
Mm-hmm.
Can you listen to your own stuff? I mean, I have a very hard time listening to myself on the radio.
I can to an extent. I have to say, I usually, you know, if I have a performance, I'll listen to the recording. If I need to do any, you know, cleaning up, I might revise the piece a little bit. And then after that, I actually don't really listen to my own stuff very much.
Mm-hmm.
If I have to send something out for, you know, for a conference or a contest or something, I'll kind of, you know, refresh my memory a bit, because, you know, some of the pieces that I wrote, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, I've kind of, they're very much out of my mind at this point.
I find it fascinating, just going back to the Kandinsky, of the impact that visual art has on your music. That seems to be something that is common among composers, of the influence that comes from visual art.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think there is about that, that has you look at something and the mind expands to a point where the creativity comes out musically?
I think any kind of artistic stimulation, whether it's visual or you know, dance, sculpture, music, whatever, just by, you know, looking at a painting or looking at a sculpture, even, you know, a building, I just think it stimulates your brain and your thought process in ways that just, you know, looking at, you know, at a blank wall or looking at the baseboard on a piano or something isn't going to do. And just that activity can kind of somehow just stimulate ideas. And for me, like, it's not all visual art. For some reason, Kandinsky just really, he's the one who does it for me. I think just a lot of the shapes and things kind of, I tend to mimic those kind of things in the music that I write. So, like, if I look at impressionistic stuff, it doesn't really generate too many ideas. It's beautiful and I like it, but it doesn't really do it for me so much. But I don't really know why so many people tend to do that. Like, yeah. Music, I think music and visual art are very, very connected in a lot of ways, even though not too many people seem to connect the two, actually.
That's fascinating. Well, we have to let you go because you have work to do,
mm-hmm.
and that'll be fun.
It will.
We wish you all the luck in the world. The festival reading session takes place at 10 o'clock, so if you're in the neighborhood, come on over. It's at the MPAC Concert Hall, all part of the American Music Festival being put on by the Albany Symphony Orchestra. Jeremy Spindler, I thank you very much. If you want to find out more about Jeremy and his work, just go to jeremyspindler.com. Jeremy, thank you very much for being with us. Best of luck in just a few minutes. That sounds beautiful.
Thank you very much.
We'll try to sneak in there
a little bit.
Thank you very much. Coming up, another composer, Aaron J. Kernis, will be here. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.